Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Good afternoon and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and if you are interested in buying a home, if you're looking at securing some real estate property for investment purposes, my guest today, Richard C. Smith, is a gentleman that I think you're going to enjoy listening to, because if you're like me, you're always interested in one, how you can protect yourself from making a mistake, especially if you're shopping for a new home. And two, well, if you're wanting to get into the investment area of buying real estate property, as I know a lady I was talking to this morning was very much interested in doing, Richard is the guy you want to talk with. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
Now, you are located where?
I am in Michigan.
In Michigan. And someone may say, Donna, you're talking to someone in Michigan. How can this guy qualify to be an expert? Well, you have been an insurance agent. You have been an estate appraiser. You are a real estate salesperson. You're a licensed builder. You are a trained home inspector. You've done all kinds of stuff for a lot of years. So what you do is you educate people about how they can make their investment of real estate work most effectively for them. And boy, I can tell you, I just had a conversation with someone this morning regarding real estate and taking a property and converting it into a rental and all of the challenges that they were looking at. So you are a wonderful resource, Richard. You have sent me some information, and I thought that these would be very good points to talk about, because we're going to cover quite a few of these, but there are so many things when we are looking at buying a home. And I think of some of the homes here in the Pacific Northwest that are like 110 years old. They are classics. They've even been made into historical buildings and all kinds of stuff. And as I was going through your information, I went, this is pretty interesting stuff. And I thought, if someone had a checklist, which, of course, with your book, which we're going to mention, which is Run, Don't Walk to Smart Home Buying, and we'll give them information on how to contact you. But this is a checklist that you can take with you. And it took you quite a bit of time to put this checklist together.
Sure. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Donna.
That's all right. So about how long did it take you to put it together? Because you've got some points a lot of people just would never, ever consider looking at.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't like to read. My book is quite long, and I thought, well, a lot of people that like to cut to the chase, so to speak, of what is really important, I thought, well, it would be pretty wise to summarize the things at the end of my book, which I felt were really important. And it's really pretty hard to summarize, so what I did is I put like 145 items in a checklist, and each of these items, is covered anywhere from a page to a half a page or two pages in the books. But it's just a good refresher, and I guess the thing that I thought of is way back in high school when I took the beginning biology class, is that instead of reading the chapter through, I would read the questions at the end of the chapter and make certain of what was important, and I'd go back and reread the chapter. And that way, you know, I found out what the author was really trying to emphasize.
Very good point. Well, let's get into some of this, because this is a time of year when I'm seeing for sale signs all over the place,
right,
or rent signs all
right
over the place, because we're getting geared up into spring. A lot of families, if they're going to move, you know, you have military families, you have all kinds of situations. People have been transferred into new jobs. So they're going to be out shopping for that new home.
Right.
Or for real estate purposes. And, of course, when the weather gets nicer, that's obviously opportune. Very few people want to look at buying a house in the middle of a blizzard. So here we are at this time of the year, and this is something, and again, we're going to sort of skip around on some of these points here,
sure,
if you don't mind.
Sure. Sure.
But I thought of a couple of points when I was going through your list, and in the Pacific Northwest, for example, we have a lot of rain, we have varied terrain, and so often there will be places built in areas that are called floodplains.
Oh, yeah.
Not too cool an idea.
Mm-hmm.
But you bring out some points. You say, look at the lay of the land.
Exactly.
And is the lot where the house is located, or a future house may be built below the road level so it acts as a catch basin. Boy, I'm looking at a piece of property right now that is an adjacent piece of property to where I am located. And it is like a pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And there's development that's been done above that pocket. And you know there has to be some kind of runoff that goes down into this property.
Right.
So
right.
Let's talk about, because you've got the situation where something's already built, perhaps in a pocket,
mm-hmm.
and then you also have the aspect of the open land. So let's address both sides of the coin there, if you don't mind.
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, a lot of things have changed in the last, say, 10 years that when people go and develop or build, many of the municipalities, well, I can't say it, are requiring a lot of developers to put in retention ponds to catch a lot of this excess runoff water from, like, parking lots and that sort of thing. And it used to be, many years ago, you didn't even see or didn't even hear about retention ponds.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you have a shopping center built anymore, so many times there has to be a retention pond built in. Used to be nobody just cared, and that water would just run off onto the adjacent property. So, you know, there are a lot of guidelines that developers are faced with now that they weren't, say, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a retention pond is quite a common thing, like our own church parking lot, which is in a small, well, it's a suburban area. When they had to go through and repave the parking lot, the architects and the city managers, city regulations, deemed, even though for this church, which only has 300 members, we had to put a retention pond in the middle of the parking lot.
In the middle of the parking lot?
You bet. You bet. But they're so concerned with runoff water anymore that they want to make sure that that water that comes down on our church parking lot is taken care of by us rather than just running off into the adjacent subdivisions and so forth. So that took a lot of the parking places, obviously. But, yeah, you know, there's, and I guess the thing that is so amazing when you talk about the uneven topography like what you're talking about in your area
mm-hmm.
is that many times you're in a stair-step type or a terrace-type situation where you don't even realize it, and it can be very subtle that there's houses built above you and that water's going to go somewhere. And if you're at the very bottom step, you're going to inherit all that water.
Yes, and you think of different areas of the country, Richard. I mean, you have different soil composition, too.
Oh, yes.
Like here in the Pacific Northwest, for example, where my office is, we have what's called a glacier path. So we can get a lot of rain, but the water goes through the soil rather rapidly because we don't have a heck of a lot of it perfectly fine.
Right, right.
We have a lot of rock. Right. Yet you have somebody that's in the south that has a red clay.
Mm-hmm.
You have areas like Texas, and when they get heavy rains, they don't have sewer systems as we have here on the West Coast because,
right.
you know, it's a sand, it's different composition. So you have different situations and different problems. That is really a challenge.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, even when a person is home shopping, too, it's not a bad idea just to have a good, reliable city or county map because that's going to show your drainages of your rivers and your streams. And sometimes on a good detailed county map, it'll even show the drainages where there is not a regular water flow, you know, like a dry wash or a dry canyon bed, so to speak. You know, in the West, they're called washes, and like in Montana, they're called coulees. In this part of the country, they would be called, you know, a dry creek bed. There may not be water in there all the time, but it would be an area where water could flow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to be aware of. So if obviously you're going to be building or buying and all of a sudden you see this huge dry creek bed to the rear of your property and you're thinking, oh, there's no problem there, and then you get into a monsoon season like they have down in Arizona, it could be a problem for you.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that we don't always think about. And that's why it's good to have that in the checklist. We have a friend that bought in a floodplain area, and he was told by the people that owned it, he talked to more than one person. He said, well, we haven't had a flood down in this area for 100 years. Well, guess what? He moves in. Within a year after he moves in, not only was there one flood, but within a three-year period, he had a flood every single year, just about. And there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's a flood plain area. So looking at the maps is very important. And I've known of people, and this is even in California, that had been in areas that have been designated fire areas, designated flood areas, and they'll go, oh, no, it won't happen to me. Right. Well, maybe they've lived there for 25 or 30 years, and now all of a sudden Mother Nature decides to do her little tap dance, and they're stuck with it. So these are things when you're buying property, you do need to pay attention to.
Well, you see it, you know, when you watch the news of all the mudslides in California, you know, people can live there for 15 or 20 years, and as you say, never have a problem, but it could be that one time that would, you know, financially ruin them.
Absolutely.
So it's, you know, just like sitting at the end of a cannon, maybe it'll never go off, but you don't want to be there the time that it does go off, you know.
So this is where we have to really look at things. We have to be realistic. We have to not, if we're going after our very first home, we need to be aware, be on the side of caution, because this is a major investment. And even if you have flood insurance, even if you have, you know, all the, you're insured to the eyelids on whatever you've got, whenever a disaster hits, believe me, I've talked to so many people that have had things happen to them, it's going to take a while before the check is in the mail, so to speak, then you got to take care of all the mess that goes along with it. So, you know, life isn't perfect, but it doesn't hurt to be alert and aware and be a savvy shopper, if you will.
You know, and even looking in terms of just the, you know, the way that it's set up in the neighborhood. Is it on a busy street, you know, and perhaps when somebody is home buying, they're there when the street doesn't have a high traffic volume. But there may be other times when it's just impossible to even get out of that house, like a shift change or something like that.
Oh, all of these little things, all of these little things make such a difference.
Well, and it's amazing how many people will buy like a house at an entrance to a subdivision right at the corner, and they, you know, will say, oh, I got such a great deal. Well, what they, yeah, they got a great deal because the people who had lived there beforehand couldn't stand all the traffic noise and had to put up privacy fences, or they couldn't back in and out of their driveway because they just didn't think, and, you know, all of us make mistakes, but they just weren't thinking of what could be the downside of that situation.
Sure, and they haven't had the experience either.
Yeah.
You know, if you've lived out in the country and you had 45 acres of land around you and maybe you had a car pass by your front area periodically, that's one way of living. But if you're living in a city, I mean, I think of the Seattle area. We have commuting challenges now that are equal. They have been equal to the L.A. Basin area for years, and it's just intensifying. So people now, I was talking with a young couple. They said, we've bought out an XYZ area because we can take another freeway route for my husband to get to work. So they moved from one particular area to another, and it was like 25 miles difference, but it made a huge difference for him commuting to work. So all of these things have to be looked at and considered, and I think also investigated, especially if you have the time. Yeah. Now, I'm talking with Richard C. Smith. We're talking about buying a home, buying a piece of property. And, Richard, you have brought up 2 points here in your checklist, which I think is awesome. And, of course, your book is called Run, Don't Walk to Smart Home Buying. And it, I think it would be a must for anybody's library that's interested in real estate. You brought up a factor about private roads and also sharing a joint driveway. I just was talking with someone yesterday who had a major challenge because someone bought the property next to their father's home, and the father is in his 80s. They're on septic, but this person had planted a tree on their property that caused the system that was set up, and it was a joint system, to burst. So here they are, and they're telling this person's elderly father, I'm going to sue you because this is your fault, and it's not even on her father's property. I mean, these are things that come up, and people say, oh, this is only, you know, this isn't real. But it is real. Here we've got a ruptured septic system that was put in God knows when, a long time ago. They're not on public sewer system at all. That may come in about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But here we've got what has been made into a legal situation. Let's talk about private roads, sharing septic systems, things like this. Why is it important to be aware of these things?
Well, just for the very issue that you raised, many times I see in rural areas where they are not, how would I say, before there was a lot of strict building regulations and rules, people would put in little subdivisions, and they would run like a private road off from the main road, whether it be a county road or a township road. And then they would, parcel off maybe 2-acre, 5-acre, 10-acre parcels and build houses back there. But it would be a private road, and the county would not maintain it because it was a private road. But so the maintenance falls to the people in that subdivision. And, you know, if you're very fortunate, maybe there's John Doe, who's a retired farmer, and he's got a tractor and he's got a dump truck that he can bring in gravel or whatever it has to be needed to maintain that road. But what happens when he moves away?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's going to take care of it? And is there anything in writing? Most banks or savings and loans or credit unions will demand that there be a written maintenance agreement so there's no misunderstanding if they're going to mortgage the purchase of a property that has a private road, to make sure whose responsibility it is to pay for what and so forth. Because, you know, in any situation, it's always human nature. You'll have one person that's saddled with carrying the burden and the rest of the people are freeloaders.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's something that's really a big issue. And then in a city area, the thing that I have seen is joint driveways and even joint common walls between properties.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously if there's maintenance needed, you know, one person in one house will point the finger at the person in the other house saying, hey, it's your responsibility to maintain this driveway, or vice versa, and, you know, nothing will ever be done. It'll just be in shambles. Or the other real bad situation is the possibility if you get somebody who's a real knucklehead that hogs the driveway. And even though there may be a joint driveway that they could both lead to parking areas, somebody may just decide they're going to start parking their car there and
mm-hmm.
blocks the flow of traffic
mm-hmm.
to both residences. So, you know, these things need to be in writing because, and another thing, believe it or not, there are some areas around this part of the state where there are even joint wells. There is a water well in some subdivisions around here that's right on the line. And what has happened sometimes is when people have tried to sell their house, and if it went through with FHA financing, FHA wanted the individuals to have their own private well. They did not want to have a common well that was shared between two or more neighbors. And so the people would be facing the predicament of spending several thousands of dollars to put down a new well if they were the seller, or tried to negotiate something with the buyers to pay for putting down a new well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's something, and, you know, someone may have bought that house on a land contract or a cash deal, and it really wasn't an issue. They had a good neighbor. There was no water problems. The well functioned properly. But then when it came time to sell, all of a sudden, you know, it's not a marketable property for that reason. So, you know, they can really, how would I say, get themselves painted into a corner without thinking about some of the predicaments.
And in today's world, especially people that live in the city, they may think, oh, well, this is not a big issue. Well, I know, for example, where we live, we had, when we moved in, we were able to fence in two sides of our property, but the back part of the property was a chain link fence that had been put in by a neighbor that had been here a good 10 years before we arrived, because the area we were living, that we moved into, was not really heavily developed at the time. And we're very fortunate because we've got good neighbors, but we made sure that the neighbor that is behind us that put in this fence, that it was okay, because one of the things that occurred with us is when we checked our property lines, we realized that he had put his fence in, and it was not right on the property line. It actually gave us, let's say, a foot or a couple of feet of extra property on ours.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said he didn't care. He has this huge, huge lot. But that's something that's important, because I've known people that have owned properties, and maybe they were just pieces of land, and then someone that built next to them encroached on it, and we're not talking about 1 foot. We're talking about maybe 12, 15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in the state of Washington, there's like a 7-year period. And if you don't make a complaint, or if you don't make that person move the fence, then you've lost that property to,
you know,
that other person that's built the fence that's expanded theirs.
Yeah. You know, what you're talking about is adverse possession.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I'm not an attorney to, you know, to expound upon that, but, you know, it's just setting people up for more and more problems is what it's doing.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to know the laws of your state.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You have to know those laws.
Well, even just as you're saying about the fencing, so many communities have fence ordinances anymore that if you think that you're going to buy a property and fence it in, it may not be legal to do that, or there may be specific regulations of what type of fencing that you can put up. So you could fence the backyard, but you couldn't fence the front yard.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of little catch-22s.
Well, I know people, if they buy property adjacent to golf courses,
mm-hmm.
those often are very strongly regulated because they don't want the beauty of the course to be adversely affected.
Uh-huh.
And I'll share a story with you. A friend of mine has just, in the past year, moved on to a facility or into a home that's located on a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to chuckle because apparently you have to carry a special insurance policy because you have golf balls that can smash your windows.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, how many times would you even think of that? But here you are. People are playing golf. Somebody can be out there, hit that ball, it goes
right.
Wacko, hit a tree or whatever,
right.
And boomerangs, and boom, your living room window is smashed.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring up about the golf course, because as an appraiser, I've heard both sides of the story. I've heard of people that, you know, I've done an appraisal on their property that was on a golf course, and, you know, they said it added so tremendously to the value and blah, 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 blah. I've also heard the downside of that story of people that have lived on a golf course for 20 years, and they said they absolutely had no privacy. There would be people in their backyard picking up the long shots, and they were just sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there's always a downside.
Mm-hmm.
And there was even an incident in this community that was played up in the press of youngsters in a upscale subdivision that the parents were having them wear, like, bicycle helmets when they were out on their swings and so forth, to make sure they didn't get beamed by a golf ball. Yeah, can you imagine that? Because they were, you know, the golf balls were flying into their yard.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they couldn't, like, move the swing sets to the front yard. So, you know, it may be very appealing to some people, but for some people, it's a big nuisance.
Yes, it is. And I know another thing that often has to be considered when you're looking at buying a place is, are you going to be able to have animals?
Yeah.
There are certain areas, depending on where you are in the country, and some of you may say, well, gee, that's no big deal. But I know personally some people that they wanted to buy in a particular neighborhood, and they had good-sized dogs, but
mm-hmm.
they take very good care of the animals. That
sure.
wasn't the point. They said, no, you're not permitted to have animals in this neighborhood.
Right.
And
right.
when they told me that, I just said, well, wait a minute, that can't
right.
possibly be right. But they said, no, it's true.
Yeah.
We were told we could not have animals above a certain size. So if you had a little Pekingese, it was okay, but if you had a Great Dane, uh-uh.
Yeah.
And I just thought, are we getting ridiculous or what? But
right.
that is what happens.
Well, even I know, and I can think of, you know, when you're talking about animals, I can think of some appraisals that I've done that would even be within this county, and that would be within a 15-mile radius, and each township would have its own set of regulations of whether a person could have a riding horse or several riding horses for
mm-hmm.
like a 10-acre parcel,
mm-hmm.
so that people that were not aware of it, and if they didn't have an appraiser who, you know, had done his due diligence of finding out what the regulations are, they would think, oh, I'll buy 10 acres and build a house in such and such a township, but they would maybe only be able to have one horse. And 5 miles, 6 miles away, another township with 10 acres, they could have six horses.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that it, you know, you really have to do your homework. You really do.
Something else, too, and this applies to home properties as well as to undeveloped properties. And I know this for a fact because here in the state of Washington, I was personally associated with a situation where a community that was like a county became a city, got all of that established, and then they changed the zoning regulations.
Oh, yeah.
Which affected the value of the property because the property had been labeled as commercial. You could have animals on it. There's another term. And it could be farming. It could be commercial. It could be residential. Well,
right.
What they did, they eliminated the farming aspect, even though this had been a major farming community. All of that changed.
Oh, yeah.
And you, as a homeowner, as a landowner, had no choice.
Right.
I mean, you absolutely had no options with this. Now, as it turned out, in this particular new city, they made certain exclusions where certain persons with certain parcels were grandfathered
mm-hmm.
in.
Right.
But the developers didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
The developers were dealing with an entirely different situation, and so a good piece of value on that property just dissipated.
Right. And, you know, you can have the same thing happen with building codes
mm-hmm.
of a township or a city setting up a different set of building codes. As an example, you could have, you know, like a resort area that would have cottage-type homes that had been there for 60, 70, 80, 100 years,
mm-hmm.
but they could change the building code so that if one of those houses is blown down or burned down, they would not allow that to be built back again.
Right.
So you'd have to go to a different style, a bigger style, and of course, the person didn't have the right insurance coverages, they'd you'd just be out of luck.
So, absolutely.
So, you know, there's a lot of little, you know, there's just so many things. And I hear over and over about so many home buyers that are spending up to 16 months doing their homework with the internet research and so forth before they even talk with a realtor.
Absolutely. I can't stress that. It's just, it is really worth that extra amount of care. If you have a super realtor, someone that really is savvy and is willing, that's really upfront with you on everything, you are going to be in a profitable positioning. Richard, I know we're almost out of time. Let us have your website
Okey-dokey. So
that people can go in because you've got so much information on your website. If you're a home buyer, no matter where you are in the country, you'd be able to utilize Richard's information. Also, his book, Run, Don't Walk to Smart Home Buying. There's all kinds of wonderful tips. Richard, what's your website?
Okay, the website is smart, home, home, buying, buying.com, besmarthomebuying.com.
Well, and Richard, this has just been absolutely marvelous, and we're out of time.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just amazing. It just whizzes by like a blink, and I'm just so delighted that you're here to share this with us because all of us want to be successful in any of our dealings with real estate, whether it's something that's a personal purchase or if it's a commercial purchase, whatever. Richard, we'll be talking again in the future. Thanks so much for being my guest today, and you have a fabulous day.
Thank you so much, Donna.
This is Donna Sebo. We are going to take a break. We're going to come right back. Don't you go away now. More good things to share.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about GlycoNutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. I want to let you know telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, hey, pick up that telephone and give me a buzz. 877-876-5227 is our telephone number in the USA. 877-876-5227. If you'd like to call in from Canada, 888-810-8322 is the Canadian number. 888-810-8322. And we also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, this lady is going to be traveling up to Alaska next week, so we've got a broadcast, actually the whole week of broadcasts will be coming to you from Fairbanks, Alaska and Anchorage, Alaska. This is one of my favorite places on the planet to go to because it's just very special and dear to my heart. So if for those of you who are listening in Alaska, I will be up there. And give me a call if you want to set up something for a private appointment. Also, I'm going to be having meetings regarding glyconutrients, which I have a real, real special passion for. And if you or anyone you know wants to get in touch with me regarding private appointments or the glyconutrients, hey, I've got an 800 number, 872-8852. That's 800-872-8852. Just give me a buzz and we'll chat about some real good things. I wanted to share a quote with you by Og Mandino, who is one of my favorite authors. He was just such an incredible man, and I can remember years ago when I got his book, The Secrets, I'm trying to think, of the Successful Salesperson. I think that's what it is. I don't know that I have the exact title. Anyway, the way he wrote the story, it was a parable. And at the end, there were scrolls that you read. Oh, I just absolutely loved what he wrote. And he was just such a wonderfully gifted writer. But this was a man that had walked a road of experience that had filled his life with so many variables. And through his storytelling, he was able to share a lot of his wisdom. Well, I have a quote in front of me by Og Mandino, again, a person that I have a great deal of respect for. And if you've never read any of his books, you really ought to consider adding it to your library because it is so important. He's just a very, very special writer. The victory of success is half won when one gains the habit of setting goals and achieving them. Even the most tedious chore will become endurable as you parade through each day convinced that every task, no matter how menial or boring, brings you closer to achieving your dreams. Let me read that again, because these are significant words. The victory of success is half won when one gains the habit of setting goals and achieving them. Even the most tedious chore will become endurable as you parade through each day convinced that every task, no matter how menial or boring, brings you closer to achieving your dreams. Setting a goal is important. Setting a goal and seeing it in your mind's eye and really visualizing it and believing in it and knowing that it is going to be yours is so important. But there's a lot of action that has to be put into positioning to get you to that goal. If in just thinking about something, we could manifest it instantaneously, which some people say they can do. But even if you did that, there's something still that has to be put into order, and that is action. Action is a part of the order of result. And I think of Liberace, and I heard this story so many, many years ago, and some of you may or may not be familiar with him, but Liberace was a man who just achieved so much acclaim in his life as a pianist, and he was known in Las Vegas as being this absolutely phenomenal entertainer, all these costumes, they have a museum dedicated to him. Liberace, when he was starting out, determined that he was going to play in the Hollywood Bowl. And this is in California, Los Angeles area, obviously. And one day, and he was a nobody. Nobody knew anybody named Liberace. It wasn't even, you know, a flick of anybody's mental eye about this person, except Liberace himself. He went and got permission to play on stage at the Hollywood Bowl, but it was vacant. Nobody was there. And what he did, he went out on stage and he pretended that he had an audience of thousands. He went through all the motions. He play-acted out what he would do. He went through the physical motions of how he would respond to this magnificent audience. He played this grand piano on the stage. He was there. He felt it. He was breathing it. He was living it. And I think it was about 5 to 7 years later, he actually was playing on the stage of the Hollywood Bowl to thousands and thousands of people. But Liberace, even though he held that vision in his mind, even though he went through that, he still had to go to various auditions. He still had to keep up his daily practice so that he could perform to the level that he wanted. He still went through all kinds of disciplines, performing for small groups, small organizations, never giving up on what he sincerely wanted to achieve. So the play acting, the visualization, the feeling of what he wanted to accomplish, all was wonderful, and it worked for him. But without all of the preceding activity that he would have to go through, it would never have evolved. And I think this is so important because so many times people will think it's just positive thinking. Well, let me share something with you. And this was with a teenager that I did some counseling with a few years back. This young lady had come into my office and she was just devastated, absolutely devastated, because she was so upset with her mother. Well, my goodness, when you get a teenager and they're in there and upset with their mother, is that a big surprise? No, not really. But her story was a little bit different. When I listened to what she was frustrated about and what she was angry about and why she was so angry with her mother, it was really a surprise, because this is a young lady who is very disciplined. She worked part-time so that she could have money. Her family was poor. And she said, "Mrs. Sebo, I am so upset with my mother. We are living on welfare. My mother is not an old woman. She knows about the philosophy of setting goals. She knows about the power of positive thinking. But my mother sits in a rocking chair. And when I talked to her about the things that she could do," and her mother was only in her 40s, "she sits in this rocking chair. She says, 'Oh, God's going to provide. God's going to provide.' And finally, she said, 'I just blew up. How is God going to provide for you if you just sit in a rocking chair and you're not open to getting up and going out and getting a job? Mom, I have to get a job. I have to work so that I can have clothes and I can buy supplies for school, etc. We're on welfare, for heaven's sake. What in the world is the matter with you?'" And her mother said, "Oh, you're just such a negative thinker." And this young lady told me, she said, "My mother has been doing this for years." Well, when I listened to the whole story, I totally understood why this young lady, who was very, very intelligent, in her middle teens, frustrated over what she couldn't change. And my response to her was, you are to be complimented. There are not many teenagers that I have had the privilege of interacting with who have the wisdom of your years. I think what you need to realize is that you're not going to be able to change your mother or her pattern. She's the only one that can change them. However, you can lead by example. Be the productive person. Continue to encourage her to stand on her own two feet and to continue to encourage her to get off the welfare system. But lead by example. By the time we finished chatting, this young lady had a respect for herself and what she had been able to accomplish, and I was very glad for that. Because this young lady was going to go out and make a difference in life. She already was, even though she was only in her middle teens. And this is something that I think we need to keep in mind. You can wish, you can desire, you can aspire, but you must be willing to walk the walk. And if your chores that you have to do, the work you're involved with maybe is not what you want, it's not the ultimate, understand it's part of the process to help you to get to where you want to go. And it's okay. Remember, one of the greatest things that we can experience in this wonderful country of ours is the opportunity of choice. In many countries of the world, if you are born into a certain class level, that's it. You don't have a hope or a prayer of getting out of that class level. Period. That's it. You're stuck with it. Here, you have a chance. Male, female, it doesn't make any difference. You have an opportunity of choice of making your life what you want it to be. And so setting goals, being aware of who you are. Don't look at how your upbringing was or anything else. Don't use that as an excuse. Understand that right now, right here, is your opportunity to take the best of what you've got and make it work for you. If you need to get additional education, go get the education. You've got a lot of options. Nothing else, go into a library and reading a book. You have opportunities, but it's up to you to get out of your rocking chair, if you will, and to get yourself in motion and in action. It means changing some patterns. It means exerting some discipline, but that is what is going to help you get to where you want to go. And perhaps you've heard me say this before. There's no such thing as an insignificant job. There is no such thing as an insignificant positioning. It doesn't exist. Everything counts. Everything has value. So give it whatever you've got. Give it your best. If you're not happy with you where you are, say, okay, I know I need to create a change. Stop bellyaching and look at what you can do to create that environment that'll give you the options of making the change that you want to make. But remember, it has to come from you. There's no magic dust that someone can sprinkle over you that's going to do an instant transformation. It all has to begin with you. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are open if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a buzz at 877-876-5227. Or from Canada, 888-810-8322. Also, our direct line of 530-876-3222. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be back for your telephone call. Also, I've got some good things to share with you, so don't go away. More good stuff to come.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. I wanted to let you know I appreciate the stories you're sending me. You know, some of the emails I'm getting from people have the most phenomenal photography. Just wonderful information. Regrettably, I'm on radio and I can't show you these spectacular works of art that people do with photography. But I do enjoy the stories and other things that you're sending me. And if you have a favorite recipe or something very special that you think I should know about, send me an email, and if I'm able to utilize it, I will be doing so. And I do try to acknowledge your email. Sometimes it's not possible for me, but do know we try to get to it. This is a story that was sent to me by Gail and Lori, and I thought it was just delightful. And it's about a family, a mom and her little girl. And the mother was saying, Danielle keeps repeating it over and over again. We've been back to this animal shelter at least 5 times. It's been weeks now since we started all of this. And this was a conversation mother was having with a volunteer at an animal shelter because they were trying to pick a puppy for their little girl, and she was the one that was going to have to pick it out. Well, the volunteer, when the mother was talking to her, wanted to know what the little girl was asking for. And the mother said, puppy size. And the woman said, well, my goodness, we've got so many puppies. If that's what she's looking for, she's going to have a lot of choices. And the mom said, oh, I know. I think we've seen most of them. But there's not a one of them that she's expressed an interest in. Well, little Danielle, and she was just a little girl. She was about 6 years old. And she comes walking into where her mom was, and her mom asked her, says, well, sweetie, did you find the puppy? And she said, no, Mommy, I haven't found the puppy. And Danielle said in sadness, Mommy, can we come back to see more puppies over the weekend? Well, the volunteer and the mom looked at each other and just sort of chuckled. And the volunteer said, well, you never know when we're going to get more puppies. Unfortunately, there is always a supply. And Danielle shook her mom by the hand and headed to the door. She said, don't worry, I'll find my puppy this weekend. Well, over the next few days, Mom and Dad were having conversations with Danielle. And you know, Mom and Dad, when they were off by themselves, were talking to each other. Said, gee whiz, she's so particular. I just don't, honestly, know what we're looking for. And I haven't a clue about what she's looking for. Well, Mom didn't quite want to give up because she knew her little girl wanted a puppy so desperately. So Dad made a comment to Danielle. We don't want to hear anything more about puppy size. And Mom brought that back up when they went back to the shelter on the weekend. And she said, Danielle, this is the last trip. Now, this is something we want you to make a determination about. Otherwise, we're just going to have to give up on this because we've come back so many times and you keep talking about puppy size and it just isn't working. Well, Saturday morning, Mom got Danielle up early. Actually, she didn't have to do that. Danielle actually was up and ready to go. So because Danielle had been to the shelter so many times, she knew her way around. So Mom goes and gets herself a cup of coffee in the waiting area and just lets Danielle look. Well, she sat, Mom did, waiting, and she was just knowing that her daughter was not going to find the right puppy size because this is a routine they've been through so many times before. And she said there was an observation window that you could see where you could see the animals during times when visitors weren't permitted. And she watched her daughter. And her little six-year-old walked slowly from cage to cage, and she was kneeling periodically to take a closer look at these puppies. And one by one, the volunteer that was on duty let Danielle hold each puppy. Isn't that a lot of patience on the part of a volunteer? Well, that was the advantage of being there early. They weren't busy. And one by one, she would say, sorry, you're not the one, to the little puppy that she would be holding, giving it back to the volunteer. Now, it was the very last cage on this last day that Danielle was going to be able to go to the shelter in search of her perfect pup. The volunteer opened the cage door, and little Danielle carefully picked up the puppy and held it closely. And this time, she held the puppy a little bit longer. Then she got excited. She said, "Mom, that's it. I found the right puppy. He's the one. I know it. It's the puppy size." Well, Mom was just beside herself. She looked at the puppy and said, "It's the same size as all the other puppies you've held over the last few weeks." She said, "No, Mom, it's not puppy size. It's the size. When I held him in my arms, he sighed." And then she proceeded to tell her mom, "Don't you remember when I asked you one day what love is, you told me love depends on the size of your heart. The more you love, the bigger the sigh." Well, the volunteer looked at the mom, and the mom looked at the volunteer, and Mom just didn't know what to do. She was just amazed, because she had understood in her adult mind that her daughter was talking about size, S-I-Z-E. It wasn't that at all. It was S-I-G-H-S, size. So, what did Mom do? Well, of course, she gave both Danielle and the puppy, just wrapped them in her arms and just hugged them tightly. And Danielle said to her, "Mom, every time you hold me, I sigh. When you and Daddy come home from work and hug each other, you both sigh. I knew I would find the right puppy for me if the puppy sighed when I held it in my arms." Then, holding the puppy up close to her face, Danielle said, "Mom, he loves me. I heard the sighs of his heart." I love that story, and I hope you've enjoyed it. How often do we misunderstand a word? Well, in this case, in the English language, we have so many words that can mean something different, but they're pronounced the same way. The difference between a sigh and a size. And a little girl's vocabulary and how she pronounces it makes all the difference in the world, especially when it's plural. Size and size. Donna Sebo here. I know that we're almost out of time, and I do want to let you know about our guests that are coming up next week. Oh, we just have, well, actually, tomorrow. Let me tell you what's coming up tomorrow. We're going to be talking about embracing change. That's with David Malin. And then we're going to be talking on Friday with It's Good to Be a Woman. Oh, we're going to have so much fun. And then next week when I'm in Alaska, here are some of my guests, because it's going to be a dynamic week. Winning Under Fire with Dale Colley. This is going to be dealing with business experiences in life that you may need to know how to handle when you are under fire. You know, there's lots of things that can happen. Also, Aging Gracefully by Amy Gorman. We're going to be talking about five different women from the age of 85 to 107. Dynamic. Absolutely phenomenal. We'll be talking about A Course in Astral Projection and Dreams. And then we're going to be touching history, war, women, and the news. The first women photographers in the Second World War. Just a dynamic lineup. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You have got so much ahead of you to look forward to. Always remember, you can look at life as a glass half empty or a glass half full. What's your choice? That's up to you. Whatever your belief system is going to give you what is the result over the long term. Life is meant to be lived, not just existed in, but lived to the fullest. Go for the gold. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Again, we'll be talking with David Malin, Embracing Change. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.